Hello and welcome. My name is Keith David, and this is the podcast that has been 2 years shelved. The reason why I've not said what podcast you're listening to, this is a syndicated show. So if you are listening to it on one of your regular channels that you might have heard my voice, you're listening to that podcast, I guess. I wanted to bring this out. I'll tell you why. Because the person who's a guest at the time, it was being recorded for a podcast called Thirsty Bitch, which no longer runs currently. So when we interviewed the person who was coming up, it was very clear very quickly that this person was in a very dark place. And there was no happy ending. We don't like the, if you are a listener to the Thirsty Bitch podcast, you would know that it's funny. You know, there's times where it's serious, but it's generally lighthearted, surface deep podcast. And when we were doing the mental health episodes, we recorded several of them, and which ones I think are still online. So, but this one just didn't fit right. So we interviewed the guest, and it got very dark and it got very serious. And we just thought, because the person wasn't out of the situation they're in, it wasn't appropriate to air it. It kind of felt like it was sensationalizing somebody's trauma for the sake of a podcast. Whether it's video, whether it's audio, you know, however you get your source of entertainment, at the end of the day, they are entertainment. His story was not entertainment. And this is where we felt it should not be broadcast. So it never did. It got shelved. It got zipped up. It got put away on Google Drive. And then recently, it's been stuck in my mind because I've been looking at this person's social media. They seem to be in a better place. There are still things going on with the person. They are still working their way through things. But it would appear that they are in a completely different space, and we're recording this podcast 2 years ago. So I reached out to him and I asked if it would be okay if I edit it down, repackage it. Now, it has been heavily edited. There's a lot of content, and a lot of it, like I said, was quite dark. It was quite serious. It was very heavy. So a lot has been edited out. Also, as well, the host from the original podcast this was on found it found the whole experience of having a successful podcast, you know, you want your own privacy. There was a lot of demand coming into our inboxes and stuff, and that, so that person I did the podcast with no longer wants that kind of limelight. It was just too much, wanted more privacy. So I personally thought it was only fair to remove the person from the podcast, because it, you know, it was agreed that more privacy, less exposure was kind of the way forward for the host of that podcast. But it doesn't matter anyway, because it's syndicated. You're listening on various podcasts. It is heavy, but it's very important as well. In this day, and especially now, we've had the Brexit, we've had the pandemic, we've been well divided on all spectrums of life. There seems to be more divide than ever at the moment. And it's very easy, and I've fallen into this category as well. It is very easy to get annoyed with people. You know, people don't behave how you expect them to behave. People are all unique. They're all different. They've all got their own thing going on in life. And there's a lot more stress now. You know, things get on top of you. So I think it's very important to understand that people are going through things, and it's okay to reach out to people if you're going through something as well. So, and it might make you realize that perhaps some things are not as important in life as others. It also might make you realize that there's somebody else that's feeling the same way you do, and it might change your life a little bit. It might get you to reach out and speak to somebody. If you are wanting, if you are affected by this podcast, then please have a look at the description in the link. There are phone numbers, email contacts, etc., etc., links to places that will help lend an ear as well. When you are listening to the podcast, please bear in mind it has been heavily edited. It's also been removed of any kind of branding from the shows as you're listening to this podcast on various other platforms. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to Phil Ryder, who was the guest on this original Thirsty Bitch Mental Health podcast. And I want to let him tell you his story. Okay, all right. And one of the reasons that we got in touch with you is that I personally have followed you for the last few years, and I remember the days where you just come out of the army as well, and you've gone, you've had a big ride
through the mental health.
Hence the name, right?
Arena, haven't you?
Yeah. So it's like, so it's going like 2015. So it goes back to when I did the big move from making the decision, do I stay up north in like a backward thinking like county that don't really accept the LGBT?
So where was this?
So it would be Byron and Furness in Cumbria. Okay. So it didn't really have that big environment of like LGBT support.
Okay.
So it's like trying to fit in that environment, trying to make friends and like communication with anyone is really hard. So when I joined the army, it was like, I started traveling more to different cities. And obviously London is something I stumbled across by accident. So it was to the point where I started building foundations here. And then kind of led on until when I came back from my tour of operations from Afghanistan.
What made you go into that?
So it's like I said, it's like most of the pressure, like, because I was in the closet at the time to debunk the idea of like, oh, I'm gay. And obviously joining the infantry division, being like the biggest part of the army, thinking, well, a gay guy doesn't join the infantry. So I kind of thought, right, if I join that part, it would kind of get rid of all speculation of gay rumors, gay ideas. It's like, this would fully immerse me into like a kind of like a different persona. So it's then living that life of a lie for like so long. And it was only till I went on tour of operations in the summer of 2010 to Afghanistan, like being out there for like, I think it was like eight, nine months tall, and being subjected to like, in your own head, because you don't have social media, you don't have your phone to get taken off of you the minute you land in Bastion.
Really?
So the minute you land in Bastion, you have to give away your mobile phone to get locked in the safe and everything. So you have no social media. So you're going out onto like the front line of like the most conflict areas, war zone, and you don't have anything to connect back home with apart from what we call in the military is an e-bluey. So you can
e-bluey.
So basically it's like a letter friends and family can write and it would get sent in the post. It's like just pen pals, basically. I love writing a letter because it's a lot more meaningful when you receive one, because the thing that you get back from it is like they've taken the time to actually write it, but also think about what they're going to write on an A4 piece of paper. You don't have the tool like Instagram or Facebook, you don't get that quick reply with a letter. It takes quite a while to get through the post.
How long does it take to get to Afghanistan a letter?
So it depends on where you're located. Like at the beginning of the tour, it weren't that bad. So we would get letters in about a 2 to 3 week period. That letter, when you write back, to think about like, what do I need to put in this? What is more meaningful and would make more of an impact and give them a better understanding of what's actually happening? So it makes you think about the style of writing you're doing, what more means to you, and then as what would connect better. So it actually improves your style of writing. And that's what I love so much about it. And unfortunately, it is, in our modern era, dying out. It's like 2010, I was actually got registered as the worst kinetic tour, because it was a year that we cut down the opium fields.
The opium fields?
Yeah, so it's part of the Taliban's main influx of money. So when they were cutting them down, they would obviously sell this on for drugs and everything else, what was supplied for weapons and other terrorist acts. Now, the government approved this and obviously realized this was a way to go forward of progressing the country's finances, where towns and villages could start growing their own crops and doing trade better and getting better money for themselves, what would then eventually, in the longer scheme of things, would improve the environment for that community. And it has done, and that's why we do it. And one thing that I always like to get across is like, when the UK went over to Afghanistan, it wasn't what people call like, oh, you went to war. It's not. We went there, as we call it, as hearts and minds, to help rebuild and restabilize a country that has been so worn torn by terrorism, being forced to live a life of tyranny. I went out there because I lost a friend from I was in training with, who was in the 2nd Battalion of the Jubilance.
Oh God.
And I kind of went out there wanting to just kind of at first get revenge, kind of like payback. Like, so it's like kind of like, you've took my mate, I'm going to take one of yours, kind of thing. Wow. But then when you sit down and have that like lesson on the culture and the back history, you're thinking, wow, like it just changes your whole mindset, thinking they've been going through this for decades. Like where it all really starts back to is when Russia couldn't take over Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So they decided to just blatantly mine and destroy everything on the way out. But what that then led to growing into is the Taliban then using to suppress anything with intelligence.
Yeah.
So universities, anyone that had like doctors, professors, they would be executed. Anyone who had like intellect.
Yeah. When I first met you, it was at Heaven, but I don't think you'd recently come back from Afghanistan.
Yeah, and so,
you appeared on the BBC program about having PTSD from that, didn't you?
Yeah. So when I left the military, I made a big decision to move down to London because when I came out in 2009, I came out with my sexuality. And then obviously when I come to London, my family at that time disowned me. So London was the only option for me because I grew my social circles through the nightlife industry. That's where I planted myself mostly and firmly. I was very fortunate because I actually started out with Shadow Lounge. And I've always had that business entrepreneurial mindset. So I really knew how to connect with people. So I used that to put myself more further into the scene. And obviously I was promoting for Shadow Lounge for some time. And then obviously they changed management. Mm. But then
when you find a circle of friends on the nightlife, and I know we'll talk about this more.
Yeah.
You can't. Are you trying to get something that you've not had from somewhere else? Because these people are just social friends, aren't they?
Yeah. So when you've been in the military for so long, and then I was in the military for so long with straight people, and it's not people who could understand my personal self. So when I came out of the military, it's like, I don't connect with this job. I don't connect with these kind of people. I need to be in an environment where people are around me who support what I am and who I am. So that's what made me draw to London. And obviously going in the nightclub scene was like pretty much one of the first poignant jobs I started, because obviously it's like what I knew I was good at is like connecting people. And then obviously it was a good way to start a foundation. Like,
but is that kind of a false, because all this time you're also going through some kind of a mental health thing with everything that you've gone through and everything you see.
Yeah, so I kept that quiet. Like, you've gone from a straight world to a gay world. You're thinking, hang on, don't show weakness, just so show vulnerability. So don't talk about anything that goes on in your head.
So you're taught in the military not to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Not vulnerable, sorry.
Yeah, but this is the thing why a lot of the time when we're talking about mental health, especially with PTSD, people think military, and it's not. PTSD is something that's a post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah. Anything traumatic that's happened to your life could could have happened, and it didn't have to be a military-related thing. Now, as I've always said, the stigma around it needs to be broken, because it doesn't make that person dangerous. It means they're going through a really rough time coping with something that may have happened maybe a month ago, sometimes even a year, because it's what sets it off. So it could be a memory, an action, a place, a smell, a sight. Yeah, it could be anything.
Exactly.
But it then made me realize, like, obviously, I was hiding a lot of my personal life at the very beginning. Like, 2015, I came to London. Unfortunately, my nan passed away. So I had to deal with coming around in terms of that. And that was a really hard thing for me, because I never really got to have closure with my nan, because there was a big heated argument over Christmas, Boxing Day dinner, about my sexuality. And like, would you come to my wedding? Like, kind of thing. If I did have one, I said, no, it's a mockery of the church.
Yeah, because you started off by wanting to enhance the gay community by taking them away from partying and drugs.
Knew me, it's like I started something like a trial based kind of thing called Gay Days, what was basically about bringing your days to life and taking away from the nightclub scene and the bars. And there's more to it than that, and it's down to the basis of communication and actually having no alcohol involved. So I was doing daytime events, crazy golf, cinema, bowling, escape rooms, and then
dogging.
Obviously
I'm joking.
Maybe next time. But like, then after that, having a sit-down dinner and just talking about just general things in life, like normal day-to-day things, what you wouldn't really have the chance in the environment that we've created over decades of a drinking culture. I was getting such a big impact on that, like people that are wanting it more. But then this is where the recipient side of my own personal life started coming into effect, where I had a lot of stuff that I was hiding and I wasn't put on a platform, because I felt like for me to push Gay Days forward, I couldn't bring my own personal life into it. I kind of felt double standard.
Do you remember that time that we met and we talked about Gay Days, and then a week later we met and you was an escort? I say a week, it may be about 10 days.
About a swift change of conversation. Yes.
No, but we talked about Gay Days and we had a big conversation about this, which was an amazing idea still. But then I met you a week later and I think you had a problem with your hotel that you worked at, and then you'd become an entertainer.
Literally caught the big interchange or the life change. So it went to the point where up to that point, I lost my nan, my uncle, my auntie, and then my mum in 2018. That, for me, was the biggest emotional, mental change in my whole entire life. When I didn't have my nighttime social friends to talk to and all that, I could always talk to my mum every day. And as mothers do, they do the mother cuddling and like, yeah, everything's going to be okay. And like, okay, I wasn't at home. But then when I was, the biggest thing was me, when she got diagnosed with terminal cancer, is that I had 6 months to try and keep that connection with her. It was really hard.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, that feeling, like knowing that you had 6 months to deal with. And then the point where you had to decide what was more important. And then discussing your funeral with your mum while she's still alive. And then at the time, I was in and out of jobs because of trying to fit in with an environment that I'm not used to. And the government saying that this shows support, and certain charities that support military transition, the British Army said support, they don't. And I'm saying this loud and clear. The British MOD do not support transition into civilian life. And I'm doing more support that this year about it and bringing it up to a bigger platform.
Good for you.
Is if they did, I wouldn't be where I was today. Because what brought this conversation about me going on into escorting, it was that I got let go from St. Pancras Renaissance Hotel because they couldn't go forward with the agreement of me having my mental health appointments on a Tuesday.
I remember saying that,
They turned around and said that it was not operationally effective.
What assholes?
Marriott International, an international recognized hotel company, turning around to an employee who's dealing with PTSD and emotional grief of leaving his family.
Sure, that's illegal though.
But this was the thing, the fact that I had so much to deal with on my plate, that what crippled me, because I still had to pay the debt from my funeral. But what I didn't realise from the government, only up till very recently, they could have helped me financially support the cost. So not only were I was worrying about supporting my brother with the promise I kept to my mum saying that he would not have to suffer when my mum passed away, that I would do everything in my power, come what may, even if it means that I have to go without and suffer, that he wouldn't.
Yeah.
And it's about putting that greater sacrifice on the line, like putting your own needs above.
But who was supporting you?
Nobody. And that was the biggest swallow of like my own self-worth, what then really dragged me down on a mental health route.
Of course.
And I don't think we've ever actually talked about this conversation after we talked in Freedom.
No.
So that night was this night I decided to change that lifestyle. I did an OnlyFans video with a guy called Andre Serez because he saw a friend dropped in the conversation about me being ex-military. He wanted to do something in uniform. I looked at it as a financial opportunity, and then that's how the adult industry came about. But then obviously he told me about the escorting world and how lucrative it can be. And I thought, at the time, weighing up what's on the table, what's more important, me actually rebuilding a future financially for myself and my brother and paying off a huge debt that I had to pay for a funeral. It's like paying off a funeral while my mum was still alive was heartbreaking. So working every single day in a hotel, knowing that I couldn't spend time with my mum, and I think you guys would have known me back then. I actually posted and said I couldn't even get home on the actual day because of freaking tube strikes. Train strikes on, because it was a bank holiday. So I was very fortunate to a friend then who drove me up to Barrow in Furness. And that's like over 300 miles away.
Wow.
And that's a big thing for any person to do. And I really appreciated that from the bottom of my heart from the person. And then that led me, because that's another thing I didn't talk about, my housing accommodation. I've been living in a hostel up until recently, what I kept quiet from everyone.
But what? Why are you keeping quiet from all this?
Because I was ashamed of it. Like, you don't want to say you're living in a hostel. It was the shame and the self-worth about, oh, not being good enough to fit into a London environment where, oh, I have my own place, I share with housemates. I didn't have that foundation when I first started. So I was trying to build myself up to that foundation, but never really, still, to this day, not got to that expectation.
But did you find yourself ashamed about that because of your social circle or because of what you've been told is not acceptable for man to behave like?
It's a bit of both, because what you're told about man is like basically you've got to be strong, you can't show weakness. But also from a social circle, like you listening to, when you go out to Heaven or anywhere in Soho or anywhere in the gay scene, everyone's talking about, oh, I just finished work, I've done this, now I'm going to have a house party and I'm going to have house dinner with friends. And he's like, fuck, I don't actually have that. I have to share a bathroom with fucking 30 other fucking people. I don't have the option of having friends over because I'm not allowed to. I've got to be, and this was a fucking Cinderella moment, I had to be home by midnight.
Oh my
so
gosh. You, is that when we saw you in Admiral Duncan and you always, do you leave before? I don't know. Was you in the hospital when we saw you in Admiral Duncan, you went?
Yes.
Maybe you had to be home for midnight.
Yeah.
That's quite sad to think that you couldn't share that information with somebody that you know.
Because I didn't want people to know, because it's like, haven't finished at 5:30. It only took me half an hour to get home. And that's when the doors opened again. So as a lot of people know, like I have posted on my social media about this and I've always kind of tried to keep it up to date as possible with what's going on. A lot of stuff I didn't really post to it because it was very, very, very personal. And I hope that people respect that form from me. But it's like, I've always been clear as possible. I've always believed social media should be used in a way where we should take that filter and that mask off and stop pretending to have, oh, this is me living a luxurious lifestyle, this is me having a happy lifestyle.
Yeah. But that's 99% of the population
exactly,
in social
but
media.
It needs to change. 2021 is a year that we need to start thinking about how we connect and communicate better. And social media platforms need to do more about how we get this content out and how we communicate better with people. Because if we keep going the way we're going, we're driving ourselves into an abyss and into a black hole where so many, especially even now, especially with the pandemic and laws in different countries, it's like they're on their own in their own heads. And the only way they're communicating through social media, pure goodness. I know pure goodness is a good thing, but when someone's not having that pure goodness on their end and they're seeing everyone else having pure goodness, it brings them down on their own.
It's depressing.
Exactly. It brings their own self-security down, anxiety, depression. And as I was just saying very briefly before we started the show, it's like I developed anxiety with myself because this was the turning point for me. It's like being someone who was so well connected with the scene, going from so many people, knowing so many people to going, gone. And I'm like, why? Yeah. And I said this at the beginning stage, leaving someone unread on WhatsApp, no message, what any social media platform you're leaving unread, and they can see you can leave them unread, and you do not reply within about 10, 15, 20 minutes on a reason why, there is no reason why. Because it takes less than 10 seconds or 20 seconds to say, be right back, currently at work, currently at friends at dinner, I will speak later. I started with that opinion, and then obviously it develops into something else. I think we need to be, like I said, we need to work on communication. That's the most important thing. Yeah. As time has gone on, and especially with lockdown going on again and again, it's making you realize what is more meaningful connections. And the reason why people don't really connect more with the people they know directly is because they don't want that to be direct when things go back to normal. Obviously, I came into, as we mentioned before, like doing the escorting because I did it because I needed to get out of the financial situation I was in. I wanted to rebuild a future for myself and for my brother. So that would then led me doing escorting, led me doing porn. It was actually a photographer called Danny Baldwin that actually messaged me out the blue and said, would you like to do a photo shoot? I looked at my pillow thinking, is he on crack? Like what, has he just smoked? It's like, I'm a skinny white bitch. Like, well. I'm not the typical...
bitch?
She is skinny. All
right. Throwing shit.
Curved in all the right places. But it's the general norm, what you see on social media platforms is like, muscly, ripped men and all the abs.
Yeah, like your Austin Sugars.
But like everyone has their own persona. There's nothing wrong with showing that, but you need to show all ends of the spectrum, just like the rainbow, as we keep promoting every year on Pride. But we don't show all ends of the spectrum of image, only the colour side of things. And I think that's the issue with the LGBT people now. We've gone so much into point like putting people into boxes, is you don't show what people actually look like in them spectrums.
Do you think that's a London thing though? Because I know up north, there's no, human enough for being north, I don't feel that obsession with the way you look as much as you do down here.
Exactly, because it's not, it's a different kind of community because we're brought in a different style of where we connect with people. We're already seeing them different ends of the spectrum straight away. While London is like, it's the capital. It's got put on a platform. We've got to be wearing this certain style, this certain look. We've got to be living a certain way. Someone who's like ginger or pale skin, Casper, the ginger kid smells of cat piss. But it's that self-insecurity that's done from a younger age. And then obviously, then it gave me that platform. And then once I had that platform and I started realizing I am liked about it, and this is why social media can be used for good things, bringing out the good in people's insecurities. It then progressed into something else. But then I fortunately took it a different way and thought, right, I have to look like this. I have to gym every day. And this is what you're saying, like, I have to gym every day. I have to be. And I did, I was literally hitting it like twice.
Were you happy?
Like, yes, because in a way, because I was thinking that I was getting to a point of acceptance with people, but also as anyone knows about mental health, fitness is also a big key to mental health. Like, I kind of, even now, so I do, like, my, even though we get one, that one day, that day to go for walks and everything else, it's like, right, I've got to go and fit my run or my walk into this, and I do it every single day because it keeps my head stimulated, it's fresher, it's the exercise, because it really does make a difference how you think. Being trapped in a house all day and sitting in a house all day does not do as you were mentioning, I was hitting the gyms, and that was the reason why I was intentionally growing that platform, using the photographers as I was doing to get out that sexy ripped body look. But now my platform, if you've seen my platform in recent times, it's now changed shift. It's gone completely the other end of the spectrum. I've now got enough platform and following to start getting out more of a personal message. What was my initial intention about mental health?
Yeah. But that, all that positivity that's coming up, you think that, you know, you're getting life back around, you were living there. But you put in here that part of that, you started escorting, you got your photos, everything's really good. But then you went into this like dark trap of starting to do drugs.
So this is something I'm really talking about.
Are you happy to talk about this?
Yeah. 100%. And this is something that I haven't talked about with on a social media platform at all.
Right.
And I realize it's the key turning point of talking about mental health.
But what is the bit that took you from sober to suddenly taking the drugs?
So it was a bit of turning the tide when you've gone from knowing so many of your close friends and you would have bent over backwards for them. Literally bent over backwards for them, and you helped them through like their difficult times. And it's why I went on the first part of my stage of lockdown a bit aggressive about the left and red, because I knew, you guys know me well, I knew so many people, and because I lived in a shitty temp accommodation in Enfield that I got plopped in away from everyone, it had massive repercussions on my mental health. Massive. And it brought insecurities, anxiety that I never thought was in me.
Yeah.
And then the fact that I was trying to reach out to people, even my nearest and dearest that I've known for longer on the scene.
Were these scene friends? Were they?
And that's where it all came about. And it then became the only friends I had was the guys that I was working with on the escorting platform. Okay. And that in itself became dangerous and toxic, because what lockdown came about, it wasn't about the alcohol, because the bars, the clubs were closed. And the only way to get the big sessions with clients was to do as we know in the escorting world is high and horny or PMP. And it's something I initially started not to do.
Yeah.
But it's, you look at what's on the table and what's at risk.
And you probably thought it was manageable. You do a few drugs and stop and then do again.
That's what everyone thinks.
Yeah.
And then that's what you keep telling yourself at the very beginning. And before you know it, you're submerged into it. And I ended up living in Paddington at the time. And it was good at the first part of the stages. Yeah. I was making a hell of a lot of money very quickly.
Yeah.
And I managed to pay off the funeral debt, and I was supporting my brother with his rent, and I was doing a lot more positive things with the money, but at the same time being completely cut off from my own. My own social circle was escorts, and then ended up when the summer, around about August time, flipped, and that was the big mental breakdown that I had. So this is the point where it crossed in. I trusted and confided in some escorts about my own personal life and my PTSD.
Okay.
Thinking I could trust them. And they used that as a business opportunity to throw me under the bus.
What? Well, did they tell like your clients that is not?
They did worse than that. They told other escorts, and especially within a certain style of nationality, if you know the industry well, they went full force with it. And that was very damaging for me, because turning around saying he's PTSD, he's military, he's dangerous. But then when what flipped even worse than that, one of the escorts was connected to one of my social circles. Mm-hmm. And then that then changed into my social circles and then ruined everything I had in my social circles. And I'm even still hearing from today, trying to reconnect with these people, trying to find out last year what these were. Mm-hmm. Nobody would tell me, was that massive question mark over my head. Yeah. And I was driving myself insane, trying to find out what have I done?
Yeah,
what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And that then drew in the anxiety, the self-worth, and that way went really downhill. And obviously to the point where, as we mentioned, and it's like, it's something I'm not scared to talk about, and it's not something I'm proud about, but it's in a weird way, I'm kind of happy that it happened, because it's opened my eyes so wide open now, and they're never going to close. Mm. It's about people's understanding and judging of people. When you're talking about OnlyFans and escorting and porn, it all went, everyone jumped on that bandwagon. Mm. And then it went to the point where I went down that point where I tried to take an overdose on God knows how many drugs. It's like, and I woke up on the bedroom floor of my apartment in Paddington with my mum's picture frame in my hand, what was the last gift of my mum before she passed away. And for me, that was like kind of sign from my mum thinking, get off the fucking floor, love. Pick yourself up. You're better than this.
That's nice.
But at the same time, then going back to social media, what I was posting, because that moment as I was getting high, I was posting the bad, the depressing, the suicide notes.
Yeah.
And I took them off, but I saw who seen it first. And that digged deep.
Yeah.
And that really upset me. But it was also, in a weird way, a fresh breath of air, thinking, right, you need now to do this independently and solo. And that changed my mindset again. To thinking, cut everyone off. It's never good, because then it got myself into my own insecurities. And when coming round to September the 23rd, I was actually illegally evicted from my apartment. So it happened in September 23rd. And I, after being having my front door broken into by my landlord, threatened if I went to the police or the council, they would come back and finish me off. And this is all what I've kept quiet until recently. It's just the point where, when the day came on the 23rd, I rang the police, got that scared of them coming back, taking my own life, because they upped the rent to an extortionate amount that I could not even imagine to afford. I was only paying $4,000 a month on rent.
$4,000 a month on rent? Yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Not shared?
Not shared.
No.
Seeing the social media timeline of what people saw when I took the suicide rate and no one reached out, I thought, why share them with another personal moment in my life and put the risk on me putting my life in someone else's hands? I thought, right, I take this into my own hands and I take it into my own control. Obviously, it led worse, because what happened, even though I informed to the police and the Metropolitan Police from the Hammersmith Department, this is an illegal eviction, not a civil dispute, an illegal eviction. I left that property. But then what they looked at me when I went to apply for emergency housing, is that they couldn't give me, because that wasn't a priority, what later came out about, because the police didn't actually file a report. So that then reluctant into me losing my whole life possessions, but was still in the apartment. I only had the phones I had on me, and being homeless, you don't have battery life because you have no one to plug in. I should have connected with my nearest and dearest. But the reason why I didn't connect with my nearest and dearest, because I was so scared of putting that big emotional stress on them. I didn't want to lose the closest people. And this is why we don't confide in our closest, because we value more than ever.
Oh. Do you need five?
Oh. Carry on. It needs to be said. people need to know that journey, because if they don't know that journey, they do not know how to get out of it. And trust me, I got so far deep into it. And I mean, so far deep, it went dark. Like the dark room of fucking XXL. But it's like, the only thing that got me out of it, and I mean the only thing, was my brother. That I could not break that promise I made to my mum. And that still to this very day is the same thing that roots me to this earth. And I will not let him down. Yeah. Come what may, even if I have to suffer that, he has not suffered once through the entire year. Even though he's been on furlough in and out of jobs, he has not suffered. And that's kind of reassuring to me that I've still kept to my promise. I still achieved something from last year. Amongst all the failures and fuck-ups, I've still done my mum proud. Showing this raw emotion is the only way, and I mean the only way, to connect with people now, because it will hit the strings, as we say, like the chord strings hard. It will hit your what being a human being is about. We're not here for the glory and the titles. We're here about actually enjoying what life is all about, being with friends and family and having good times and good memories and everything else. But we get so lost in the translation of what it's all meant to be about. I've gone so down to my roots more than ever, more than so.
That's good.
Now, obviously there is light at the dental, but like I said, it needs to go through step by step because people need to know the transition. I went through a stage where the government failed me, the council failed me, and I got forced back into these kind of rogue landlords that I was with. And I'm still am to this day. And it forced me back. Like, I took a break from the drugs because I really wanted to come completely clean off it because I knew it wasn't doing me good.
Was that easy?
It wasn't easy because when the sleep caught up with me, it was horrendous. Yeah. I slept for like 5 days straight and I've never, ever done that. But then also, I knew sleep was bad for me from what I said from my PTSD article in the BBC. It's because it put me in the area of my mind where my box was, where I put everything under lock. And that was the dreams about my PTSD with the army, with losing comrades, but then also with the grievances with my mum and my family. And that's where they all were. And it was always in that box, getting out of that and then sleeping that much and hitting that more. And then I had a break for so long from, and I think a lot of people realize this, I had a break from social media for quite a while and I didn't post anything. And some people were popping up like, how are you doing? I haven't seen and heard of you for a while because you've been so social active in the past. I'm thinking, I'm just not ready. I need to get my own personal health back into a stronger state. And the mental health waiting list to see if I'm a therapist right now.
Long time.
At the very beginning when I got diagnosed it, didn't got awarded to me because they didn't tell me that I'm entitled to it.
Yeah. It's a long way to go in the UK for mental health, isn't it?
I've got to wait till the 12th of February to my next phone call appointment. If someone's suffering from mental health and the world is literally crumbling underneath them and the government knows this and the department knows this, they should be making the assumption that you shouldn't have to wait to the 12th of February. And that's the issue that I and I'm going to keep persisting with this through social media, that there needs to be a change in government policy about mental health. And they're still not addressing this.
The only way they'll do something instantly, because I looked into this, is that if you speak to them and say that you are having suicidal thoughts, that's the only way they react immediately.
That then brings me on my next point. I've had suicidal thoughts in the past. When I was moved into my temporary accommodation initially, and then when I lost my mum, I had them suicidal thoughts. And that put me on to stopping my therapy with my PTSD to move me on to a social caseworker who I had one appointment with, then said, oh, you need daycare. We were three people came to my room in a studio, like shitty apartment in Enfield, that literally is half the size of this room right now, where it's probably about 4 meter by 4 meter. quite LCD.
Very visual. Very visual.
But it was having three people stood in your room while you sat on your bed saying, how are you feeling today? And like, this is not how, this is not how you should be assessing someone's mental health or someone's suicidal thoughts. And to the point where I kept on saying, yeah, I'm fine. Just to get them, I'm now going back on myself, realizing I'm I need to go back down the official route, and it's hard. I can tell anyone who's out there listening right now, it is hard. But the only way you're going to get through it is find these nearest dudes that you are so close to and you're scared of losing. Confide in them, because they will reach out and they will help. Cool. And it's one of the things I've now changed in my slogans is reach out, speak out. Because if you don't reach out and you don't speak out, you don't connect. Mm. And in that connection is so, so, so vital in getting yourself back on track and getting other people to understand you better and what's actually really going on. And sometimes we are ashamed to talk about our own insecurities and our own issues. And some people see, up to even very recently today, that you confide in people where they come across as nice at the beginning and they're also nicey-nicey. And then all of a sudden you see what the initial gain...
When you need them, they're not there.
Yeah, exactly. And when you've become an expense to them, like, we've got what we need, bye-bye. And it's happened to me today. And personal things have come about where I'm now back in that shithole again. It is upsetting. And I've just got to keep going and rolling with the punches, because it's something, when you deal with mental health, as I say to a lot of people, it is like one of these long... Life is a long road.
Yeah,
it has the speed bumps, it has the turns, and there's sometimes you don't know which way to go. Just take it, whatever you feel best at the time, but just keep rolling with the punches, because the punches are going to keep coming regardless. It's life, and I'm afraid to say it, but this is how it makes you as a person, because you need to keep getting back up. And as hard it is getting back up, and trust me, it is so hard. Like, even when you think the world is against you and you have government turning against, well, not even supporting you, and you're having your friend at the time that you thought were your friend not support you. And like I said, that dark hole where you think all light is gone. For me, it was my brother, and I found that. And I, out of all the darkness, I found that as a way to haul myself back out.
It's amazing.
And that's the only thing that keeps pulling me out. It is so important. And I see this more than now, even especially more than today. All I'm going to say is don't be scared. It's scary to think you're going to lose the closest friends, but sometimes it's better to let them know than not know, than to go through that dark hole. It's horrible. Trust me.
Yeah.
I never want to go back through that dark hole again. And I would like to think I'm through it. I think I'm going back in it again, but it's horrible. Yeah. But do not be scared. Speak out and reach out, because that's the only way you're going to get out. Yeah. It is the only way you're going to get out, because if you keep going around that circle, that rat run, as we keep calling it, especially in lockdown where you can't get out of your home sometimes, it becomes so toxic and isolating in your head. It becomes dangerous in your head. And that's when the suicidal thoughts come in. Yeah. But I say this all the time on social media, you are not alone. We connect with people and realize that we actually share the same burdens and the same issues and insecurities. The more you can, I get people I can relate to, and we can help each other. And that's what 2021 is about, helping each other. There is people going to fall this year hard, but it's about helping them through it, because you don't know when you are going to next fall hard. And it's about pulling up together.
Well, like we said earlier, there's 1 in 4 people in the UK that during a period of a year suffer from some kind of mental health. So do check out all our details if you are suffering from any of this, or if you want to reach out to any one of us. I'm sure Phil, maybe if someone drops you a DM.
The main social media that I have is the Only Phil Ryder. I actually apply to every single message, private message or mainstream message, because everyone has the opportunity and the chance to connect, regardless, because everyone deserves it.
And that was the podcast that had been shelved for 2 years. If you have been affected by this podcast at all, please check out all the details in the links, and you can reach out to someone who could lend an ear, or maybe you want to lend an ear to somebody that you may think needs it, or maybe just send a message to your loved ones and ask them if they're okay. If you don't want to reach out to Phil, then his details were on the podcast, or do a search for him on Instagram or social media, Phil Ryder. And hopefully things are just a little bit better. Feel free to get in touch with me. It's at Keith with a Y, Keith David, on social media, on Instagram. Not really active on social media, to be honest. It's not really my thing. Or you can do a search, Keith David, Keith with a Y, David, on the internet, on your mobile phone, and find out some more details. But for now, I will see you again in the next podcast. Okay, all right.